Thanks a million, you are very welcome. I think Paul has flagged the field of theatre quite well. The MC has flagged us, I think there's a couple of cars going down. It's 2 weekends away, and it's a lovely little village, and the log fires and pubs, and no tourists other than yourselves. And
sex.
Lots of brothels.
What?
Lots of brothels.
Lots of brothels. What's the word for the brothel again in the... what's the Irish word for the brothel?
Pub.
Sorry. And also, as you said, there's plenty of open mic opportunity. Because, you know, you go to a lot of festivals and you get to hear things, but you don't necessarily get to perform yourself. There's plenty of open mic opportunities on the Friday night, on this, well, Friday night kind of as well, the Friday night, the Saturday night, and on the Sunday morning. Yeah. Anyhow, I'll shut up and read a poem. This is a London poem, and it's an immigration theme. After their boy leaves home, Joe insists the lad's Airfix models remain hanging, but gives away the tired out vinyl records, the turntable going to a nephew just getting his teens. Mary washes his left behind clothes, doles them by, unworn to her nephews, worn to Oxfam, well worn to a recycling bin, three underpants become dusters. In his playhouse in the garden, he'd hidden child colours with black paint, sat head bent under the low ceiling, plucking guitar chords. Joe bursts the roof, hinges it, creases it, makes a fuel shed. Mary misses most the sounds from the mini amp through her kitchen window. It's out of place in the porch, waiting for inquiries to an ad in the local paper. He'll buy a better model when he gets his feet in London, he says, and promises, swears to them he'll never busk on the underground. Thank you very much.
Kevin Griffith.
Just a thought for you there before I begin. If at first you don't succeed, then perhaps skydiving is not for you. The Moon Woman. You found her first in the light that seeped through the house, but all was not lost and much became a glow. The only way they could keep each other was with strings like puppet masters. They soon drew out salt tears that in time became whimpers. When she was listening to the trickle of brown water, the foot scurry of animals, the wind whistle in their owns, and tomorrow's bird song in the secrets of the pans. As the same light led the cocks to crow, the whole valley heaved and fell with their breathing. Turf smoke rose in columns to an early sky, and she was again minded to go. One more. Called I Was Sorry. I was sorry to have missed the spring. The winter dragged this year, stained April, touched and violated me, broke other promises. It was all I could do not to think of any afterlife. I had left so many words trapped in yesterday's pages, and the best of days are hurried. It is a time of angst, and the horizons are uncommitted, and the small blue of the sky has little wisps of envy. The mountain in front curtails perspective, and there's a tumbling to where the water beats itself white. Too much. The window frames a world all about tedium and melancholy. Thank you very much. And by the way, I am going down to what Louis calls Dingle. I mean, if they hadn't praised the place and praised the ad on RT, who I feel not to be there.
Yes.
See you in Ballyferrit.
Thank you.
And Dingle.
Kevin and I both belong to the same writers group in Killorgan, and we don't so much deliver a poetry or recite it, we inflict it. It's a long story, but anyway, if you'll excuse me, I'll inflict two. They're not terribly long, 20s, that kind of line. So, both new ones, so I'm out on them a bit. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Twice. I don't know why I hear. Twice. That fleeting black moment, the overwhelming crack of on your head, in your head thunder, exploding 100 yards directly above, happened to me twice. Once, hurrying through a London car park where a flesh-stinging torrent was momentarily accelerated by the shockwave, all the noise of all of London disappeared for a full 7 seconds, drowned by nature's obscene self-indulgence, the previewed soundtrack of apocalypse. Second, in my Kerry Haven, when the briefest all-pervading flash of light acted as a midnight nano-prelude to the head and gut-wrenching wall of sound, a kingdom-splitting hammer blow that felt like it had pulverized every atom, shattered every nucleus within a 10-mile radius. The brutal intensity of that flash soaking through roof and floor deepened the instant aftermath, the totality of darkness riven by nature's acoustic violence in raw excess. My mother taught me to count the seconds between lightning flashes and thunderclaps to track the progress of a storm. Smiling, my dad pointed out, occasionally there's no time to count. This one is a hot off the press poem, not completely unrehearsed, but anyway, new, called Code. The cleverness of slugs is not universally recognized. Those abstract art pieces and their super logic equations openly concealed in square mile upon square mile of slime trail defy recognition by the brainiest birds or even the rushing intellects of jostling humanity. Guruic professors of science, with their hordes of lackeys, keyboard addicts, fingers scrambling, drowning in their own flood of dross-fueled digital figments, busy and hurry themselves in total innocence of slug intelligence. But hidden within slug art and their own highly specialized multidimensional mathematics is a coded warning to their descendants on planets surrounding Betelgeuse and their Cassiopeian cousins clustered on slug-friendly mellow moons. That warning in translation would read, "Lads, stay the fuck away from here."
Mirrors. There's a picture a quarter of a century old lodged in my darkest recess. Long buried, it has surfaced again. I examine that which made me. skeleton of a bond stripped now of flesh and blood. A worn, round-faced man in fading color, dandling a baby, mine, on his knee. The tentative hold, knee in mid-bounce, the fleetingly happy, vaguely disappointed diagonal glance at the picture taker. Each eyebrow a dark, arched bush, the fingers of the left hand brown as chestnut, the habit of quietly killing. Dim grey memories of 35 years before that colour print, a gregarious face in a fox brownie snap, which had it been the colour of imagination, would have been red-cheeked, not quite so round, with jet-black straight back, vaseline hair. Two little boys bounce upon his knees, the same dimpled smile, but happy then, as carelessly open as the shirt collar, crisp as the snazzy plus fours, tartan socks and bros. Round head, thick neck, impression of heaviness, belied in both pictures by close scrutiny of the body. Head and face, reminiscent of Enrico Caruso, as was his morning shade singing between the long, dual voids of despair.
Let us speak of his way, the way of nature to live simple and call upon the power of Jah, Rastafari Emperor Haile Selassie, Buddha, Jesus, and all them houses of religion to respect the bounty of nature, in tune with the elements. Mountain mantras, clouds of smoke, and truly in touch with forces long forgotten, many paths climb the same mountain. I, and in that natural power, strike down the ways of Babylon, wanting things, expecting things to make them airy, and things fade. Fade in nature's path, the world of illusion, Maya the false ways. Hail to Jah. Hanging out in me yard in Mallow Town, me thinking about the time the pitchforks came and all rose up against the forces of Babylon. Me thinking Handsworth Revolution, Steel Pulse UB40, White Riot, Clash, Black Riot, Brixton, Toxteth, Liverpool 8, 1980, and as one, the youth then did riot. Against the world of Thatcher and Reagan, cause John Wayne was not available. No hope in a world passing them by. Getting up the streets, counter to culture. Streets is where we live, blowing up, hanging out, chilling. And a man, he was told, Lord Scarman, to write one of them government reports. He investigated, he said, them Babylon racist, this Scarman. And all of them regulation relating to Babylon, them guardy men and such, them police, them rules, them change. Change? men the same, politics the same, and then things he said about our rights, proper yard, learning opportunity, fix the disconnect, then things were never done. And now we see the lesson, more riot, more pitchfork, Croydon, Belfast, Greece, Arab Spring, in all them places where things is wrong, fix the disconnect so nature can nurture. Your power as nature, your nature as power. You listen, you learn, and follow what make you feel I'm here to judge.
Times and places, horses have been won and lost in card games, but not in Dublin of this period. In some dioceses, one might add, poker had not been regarded as a suitable recreation for priests. During a friendly game at the Dublin Hotel one evening, Father Toohey mentioned his desire to sell his horse. He was thirsty. Too high? He was closely questioned about Jack, of course, by his friend O'Hara, the TD, and others. "Where did you buy him from?" asked one of O'Hara's friends. "When he heard the name of Ham Russell, he said that would put up his price. I hope it's going to be worth it. Where is the great man now, by the way?" "In Bournemouth, I believe," said Father Toohey. "A lucky man, you might say." Safer, couldn't it?" said O'Hara, what she was saying. "It will stay behind these walls, father," said O'Hara's friend, not quite seriously. The next hand was won with three kings, and the game came to an end. O'Hara was sent down for a nightcap and was joined by several others in whiskey and water. Then Joyce, a Dublin draper, said, "I may have a buyer for your horse, but I'll get back to you in a day or two when I see your man." He was as good as his word. Father Toohey had very little work to do to sell the animal, which was grazing in a paddock in a religious house near Dublin. He got a decent price, and so Jack became the property of Dublin solicitor, a sportsman who was no longer young and needed a weight carrier, which is a new life for Jack.
Rosie O'Regan.
Short lived. These words here, small, tomorrow, different.
Just a
Thank you.
I just follow on from what I was reading last week. There's a breaking at the site and everything, all the equipment was stolen. That's stressful enough in anybody's language. But in this case, it sends one of the members of staff over the edge. Well, it was good for Jack. He came in the form of an ambulance rolling up the dirt track. Only now we have time to find Jack maniacally flailing his arms about, surfing profusely, watching himself and being very excitable. Come along, says Marek, leading Jack by the arm to the ambulance, displaying enough strength and professional to restrain him. Declan and Kate clambered into the ambulance, lending more support, as it made its way towards St. Dimna's, or the red brick it was fetching the own and the other side of town. Besides trying to make sense of the situation, everyone was concerned for his welfare, and once they came home, they went into the kitchen and made their obligatory cup of tea amongst themselves. Kate came home empty-handed. To all intents and purposes, she was a changed person, like someone who had seen the other darkness in the name of one's soul. Hey, Kate, are you okay? How's Jack? He's in hospital. What's going on? He's in sections. Mother of God, is it really that bad? Kate burst into tears. She was obviously in shock, regaining composure just to give John a piece of paper. It's from the paramedics, she sniffed. What is this, he said. Quote, is natural an experience who has someone who has been subjected to witnessing a robbery to be in a heightened state of arousal. Well, he was sectioned, that explained the conspiracy theories, said Alison, probably a very cup of very sugary tea to Kate. Kate was incomprehensible between subs. Her efforts at communication led to crying Sheila's shoulder, the scales falling from her eyes in the process. I know it's hard to live with the whole Astroturf thing, but this whole story about shape-shifting lizards and global conspiracies was a bit much. Paranoia was getting a bit much for me. I know, do you remember when he told us he was struck by lightning, and I believed him? Why couldn't I see it then? I could have told you that. What else did he tell you? Well, he did say that he was kicked out of Britain for spying on UFOs and aliens. He said that he'd broken the Official Secrets Act and couldn't get back into the UK until the Prime Minister says so. Alison chuckled derisively. Oh, for goodness sake, she sighed. My father's a Garda, and we make the Official Secrets Act at least 20 times before breakfast. So what's the big deal? If he was that dangerous, they would have bumped him off surely, besides going after us. And after work? If he seriously wanted to escape, Ireland is not the provider of choice, or the IRA and all that. Kate was now crying salty tears. What was this about hiding in places? He told me he was in the RAF for a while. Sheila looked at Kate understandingly. I'm not going to even answer that. But it was nothing common for blokes to cook up schemes to dupe kind-hearted women such as you. The women always fall and fall to a bomb, James Bond factor. Just one thing, did he ever ask you for money? I had nothing to give him. But I always paid his half rent when he was out getting stoned. He's paying to move in here with me. Even though he's getting paid himself? The same money has happened, don't know where it all went to. Sheila whispered, drugs. She paid the deposit herself. Kate at this time was getting outraged at her own foolishness. Well, I'm pretty sure he knows every legal loophole in the country in such cases. If what he says is true, he probably deported the behest of MI5. I wish you could hang him every loophole was in the country to only see which one worked. Time for you to move on, I guess. Just walk away. He's a deadbeat. Waster. He said somebody was sleeping in his car before he came here. Take it he wasn't lying there. Now I can't prevent, eh? No, not that salubrious, no. Greg decided to cut in. Did you ever regale you about the wonderful food tree we have together? Yes, constantly. You do the math. I was over at his place cooking nice meals for him when he was out the door. I would do something urgent when in fact he was up getting stoned. God, I was mad enough to kill. Time for you to move on, Kate. Any place there was in crackpots like him. The red brick is always the right place for him. Where to? Where would I go? Just far away from Jack. He's an idiot. Whole night, so no, as I know that, you should too. The following day was resigned that generator and computer equipment had been a lost cause. Company insurance ensured that the equipment was replaced. Unlike Jack, whom we're seeing, would live out his days away from normal society. Thank you.
Calling next.
The call one.
This is a piece called Conversation in a Port Academy. I wouldn't give a toss for any life except the one I have. What do you guys get on average anyway? Is it love or what? He buckles his belt to the last loop, releases his breath, twists his gut in his pants, returns to his desk. Eating sandwiches made for the week frozen on a Friday. Drinks chicken soup, boiled up on Monday night. Sunday's dinner was stock. That's a fantastic soup all the same, if I say so myself. There's a trick to preparing it just right, before straining the bones out. I'll have a few cans now while cooking, Dutch gold. I wouldn't go down to that pub anymore, they'd rob you blind. I'll take out the guitar on the weekend. I might do that. There was a time I played 10 gigs a week. Music would be great for a marriage, I'd say. A friend of mine used to be out every night playing the box. Wife pulling her hair out. What did she do? Took up the things. Flying there. I'll be free now when we finish up here at Christmas. A free man, do as I please. Christmas day off down to Cove Cathedral for Mass. Then a long walk around Cove. Head home to make dinner. That'd be my Christmas day. Won't you go to your mother's? I ask. No, I'll go to our Stephen's. For the turkey and ham with the mother and sister. I'll be wanting Christmas. I might even get into a romantic mood. He stretches his legs. There's dust an inch thick on the sideboard at home. He laughs with pride. No woman would come near the place. There's a one in Accra has her eye on me. I don't know. What are the positive aspects of having a wife? Sex! Shouts out John. Yeah, sex, I suppose. Well, I'm 59 and I'm living my life the way that I please. He sets up two chairs for his afternoon snooze. We tiptoe out as he drifts off, muttering on his bubbly breath. So what could you need? Is it lovely or what?
Thank you.
Silken in the tie that keeps our wrists in bondage. You say you know our heartfelt headache as we live hand to mouth, but ask us not to make a meal of it. Well, just enough to feed myself, sir. Perhaps my wife and kids. And I suppose if they get thirsty, they can kiss my crying eyelids. Or put out their hand and await the meter stick. As you ask, what's the problem? I thought your skin was thick. And give cues to the cues outside the dull office. Here are your cards, now deal with it. And if you don't like the game, well, we've got boats and planes. And a number for your name. Well, since you've made us sweat for our stay, you can put up with the smell beneath our arms. As we stand outside and smoke, and recall the voice that galls, and absorb what it spoke. As it told us red was blue, that these oppressive measures are benefiting you. Well, you can suffer the workers' whistling charms, but who will silence the alarms? As you count your cash, put it in a hungry hand, tell them sweep up the broken glass. It's all.